All right. So, as we're getting ready, let me say good afternoon. Thank you for those that have managed to find the roads and didn't slip your way here. Hopefully, we'll get you home before they freeze. Before we get started, we actually have a very interesting meeting, I think, ahead of us. I wanted to mention two things, one of which is you should have gotten an attached letter via Jeannie's email about the regional meetings that are going on Thursday and Friday of this week. On Thursday morning at 8 o'clock, we will be in New London. In 2 o'clock in the afternoon, we will be in Hartford. And Friday morning, we will be in Torrington. These are the regional meetings that we talked about last time that really the intent is to allow our community outside of our higher educational institutions a chance to really kick the tires with some of the work we're going to do today to really get an better understanding of what our potential goals may be, get their reaction. Are they the right ones? Do they need to be tweaked? Are there things we've left out? How do we attach the business community, the economic development community to our plan? If you are planning to come, I would please ask that you, if you know today that you are, please let me know. We're trying to plan accordingly. We're doing tent cards and whatever. And I would respectfully ask that our planning commission folks are there as observers. Our voices are those of the invitees that are there. These are smaller meetings. They are under 20. And there's some very interesting folks that are coming and planning to attend. But I really would encourage people to come. So if you would like to come, please let me know. If you cannot, there are three more in January up and coming. I will be sending you those dates, 21st, 22nd, 23rd. We will be in New Haven, Middletown, and Norwalk to get that portion of the state. So as soon as those dates and locations are set in stone, I will send another letter out to folks to do that. But again, if you do plan to attend the ones this week, please let me know. Other than that, I would just put a placeholder in terms of asking for your flexibility. As we go in, as the legislature goes into session, this room is going to become very prized territory real estate, and we are not the priority, so we may be asked to move. So please. Well, I mean, the laws of the state are important. We're important, too, but we can share. So I would just ask for your flexibility in recognizing that it may not always be in this room and we may need to move it, but you've all been terrific. So with that, I wonder if we could just talk about accepting the minutes from the November meeting. Do I have a motion?
Move to accept.
Thank you. And a second? Thank you. All those in favor? Any opposed? Any abstentions? Minutes are accepted as put forward. Ames, I'm going to turn the meeting over to you. Those of you that have not met him, I hope, think you all have, but the Ames McGinnis from NCHEMS is going to walk us through a very interesting meeting today. Ames, actually, I sit on a task force that Dr. Gray has put together on early college and some of the other models, and in fact, they've done an inventory. In fact, I think in Waterbury, for example, they are looking, Waterbury schools in Naugatuck Valley are working in the 10th and 11th grade around the acuplacer. I don't think we've gotten to smarter balance yet because we've not yet moved there.
Just a comment on this one. This one is, this chart is just such a revelation, I think, and so disappointing to see where Connecticut is on this. I mean, this really, yeah, and it really,
Thank you. done, and this is part of our assignment, and I come down to the spot at this time. We develop the model that basically will tell you that if you have a lawyer who says that 70% of the population having a disability is considered above, or some kind of potential potential, what version of this lawyer needs to be pursued by the inspector?
the good news is that both the Commissioner Pryor and Dr. Gray, President Gray, are working together to really move, ratchet that up. So hopefully that's a good sign. Well, officially by funding K-12, but everybody, as Judy would say, right?
There is a structure, a formal structure, but my comment was, I think everybody is doing some form of adult education.
I think if you, again, pick on Rhode Island, one of the things you find in Rhode Island is that personally got a major problem of, in several different categories. A lot of students have left. We have left the secondary system early, and are trying to be in the workforce and absolutely no demand for this or ever. The second group of people who are young people who have graduated but really lack the skills.
Ames, these regional meetings may be really helpful in terms of the community colleges looking at certificate programs in different areas and potentially painting a different picture for us going forward, because I'm coming around to thinking that through looking at this that our certificate programs may be in the wrong places.
Many of those are in the non-credit side of the house, so you would not necessarily have access to some of that. So, you know, that is something, and the advanced manufacturing certificates actually at the community colleges started out as non-credit, although they are now moving into the credit arenas. Well, at least, and I don't know, you know, if the conversation can accommodate it, but in many of the cases, there is a credential which is recognized nationally that could be used as a way to assess, the ability to move into collegiate level work, you know, is in terms of credit for prior learning or however you want to do it. But the ones that are tied to the industry sectors where there's growth, usually there's a credential that comes with it that's recognized by the outside world that we might be able to look at as a way.
This is what I was kind of getting at a little bit when we were talking before the meeting. It worries me greatly in terms of the expectations of the people getting their certificates, as well as the employers of the people that are getting those certificates. In the following sense, things are changing so rapidly these days that as I understand, most of the certificates, or a lot of them, as we were just talking, are not really accredited or some comparable term, certified or whatever you want to put in there. But beyond that, they really have to be, if it's going to be a short-term kind of a course or whatever it is, they have to be focused on either what's going to be true a year or two from now and the best knowledge, or what's being done right now, or in the worst case scenario, we're going to teach it just like we did 5 years ago. And the bottom line is that no matter what that is, because we can't look that far in the future, there's really a need to keep this certification going or updated or whatever. And one of the things that would help that would be if that person had some prior associate's degree or a bachelor's degree or whatever, so that they have, in fact, learned a little bit on how to learn, so that you can do some kind of ongoing personal development as you move through. Could even be a discussion at the employer's place or whatever.
It could be, but I might argue with John a bit. If I'm not suggesting this is true of all certificates, but, you know, let's take the advanced manufacturing certificate as an example, you know, the one that began it as NunTech. It was very closely designed around the needs of the manufacturing, and it's very focused on learning. we're talking about math beyond, you know, four-function math. We're talking about trig and calculus, actually. And part of the exercise in translating the classroom and then moving to the machine is learning to learn. So I think we need to be careful not to pronounce all certificates that the only place we can learn how to learn is through a degree program. Many of these students that are there may come to a degree program, and that's, however we get them, that's a very valid exercise as well.
thing I've observed about these is that they also begin to mix in things that are not really goals. As I mentioned earlier, you know, maintaining academic freedom is really an important value, but kind of trying to think of goals. But those are already outlined in the statute. The accountability that's actually mandated for all the higher education sectors in the public system are all around these kinds of things. Okay, so what I'd like to do is go back to the list I had before and simply ask you if we put these out, again, think of the regional form. And the second, what is missing? Are we right on the right track? Are these a reasonable summary of what?
Ames, before you go, Ames, I didn't mean to interrupt, but Judy and I are discussing the goals for the state systems for that. And I wondered, in looking at them, Judy said to me, how do you measure those? But aren't those really mission statements as opposed to goals? You know, to protect. Yes, go this one, this page of the list. Anyway, I just.
No, I think that's really good. But
should we go back to the gender gap in terms of attainment in college? I mean, your first slide shows numbers that are quite serious, and I think we have data of that sort from other sources. I think it's worth. I think so. And of course, one can list reasons for that, but I'm sure you know them. And it's considerable. I mean, I came to this issue when, as Dean of Engineering, I was trying to get more women to do hard sciences and engineering, and I came almost by accident to the reverse situation, that males do not, they shy away from college education. For the last 30, 40 years. So what it does, it undermines their ability to earn, erodes their ability to earn, be competitive, and so on.
In terms of the themes and the goals established by the Coordinating Council, in terms of sort of meshing them together, if you look at reducing education attainment gaps that we identified with specific numbers, and then you look at the goals by the Coordinating Council, they state, you know, under equity, it's really what Vagos is getting at, because they point to gender, and we didn't do that when we talked about it.
Gaps on ethnicity, race, economic, and gender. Yeah, so
aims. On the second bullet there, I wonder if just the in the spirit of disclosure of what we're saying here, I mean the current unpreparedness rate is 70% of those exiting 12th grade into community college. And should we put there that by 2025 we're simply saying that 35% are unprepared to take basic college, either math or English or both, by 2025, and we're saying that will be our definition of success. It is a modest goal, in my judgment, but if I fully understand that goals need to be achievable and realistic. So, but I just, as in the third bullet that puts out from 29 to 15%, I'm just wondering if we want to be intellectually honest and say really what we're up against here and what we're really striving to do.
Dennis, were you just looking to actually have the number listed there? I think what he's saying, as we did in the other bullet, to actually say reduce it by half to 35% versus.
I was kind of sub silentio saying that's quite a modest goal here. I mean, it's.
It's a concentration issue in certain areas, and I just wanted to speak to the reduce the education attainment gaps. And this has been a core focus of Education Connecticut for the last two decades. There have been lawsuits, there's been so much thrown at this. The legislature's been very generous. There have been urban initiatives of all types. Colleges have worked on it. School districts have worked on it. And I would love to think that's realistic, but I mean, I think if we're going to have that, we have to have a plan. We've got to have even more specific plan, and there's so many things that go into this achievement gap. There's poverty, there's unemployment, there's incarceration, there's so many issues addressing kids in this state, and for those of us that have lived here and worked here a long time, any one of these issues could be critical, but the one that we're probably least likely to solve or to, again, being honest, is the achievement gap. The education attainment gap, maybe we talk about it in terms of college or in terms of post-secondary, because that might be something that we could focus programs on. But talking about it K-12, that gets into so many initiatives that have already been underway. I think it's important that we acknowledge that as a state, we realize it's a problem. We've thrown a lot of things at it, and it's probably an unlikely statistic to be met.
Let me just ask a question. If you focus on more particularly on not just what everybody's doing,
right,
but the role of higher education,
okay,
like,
yeah. That's what I'm saying. I mean, I feel, yeah.
A little bit different.
Yeah.
I just want to talk about other states. One of the things that we've had experience talking about places like Chicago and places like that community colleges play an incredible role, not necessarily in providing services, but in actually having responsibility for an area that can be essentially the catalyst for coordinating local groups as they, in fact, I was talking to Judy earlier in the interview with Randy. He's just with a young person who, in Hartford, and he said, "See, you know, I just came back from the military, and I think I have some skills." And I said, "Well, you're going to community college." And he said, "No, I haven't really thought of it." And what I thought of is what ought to be available at most places is the community college is a great source of help on basically assessment. Say these are the opportunities available and ways to manage it. And Judy's comment said that is actually not a very strong role for community colleges in Connecticut. They don't connect finance
I might frame it differently. The way in which the budgets have shaken out, and especially in the days of economic exigency, the ability to add staff in the student services arena has been very difficult, and that if we looked at the ratio of how many counselors per students that we are serving, and I don't know where that is with the other constituent units. I would think that even at CSU that ratio is rather high as well, too, and it's of great concern to me. But I think part of that has been born of you know, is the tension between do we need faculty lines or student services lines. But it is something that the community colleges would do very well were they to have more staff.
Can I ask a question about that? I mean, we've been listening to statistics that basically say that if we don't make a difference in that arena, that we can't achieve any of the other goals, if I understand them correctly. So I think we've got a little bit of a chicken and egg scenario here, and I think that, you know, if we can't solve that problem, we can't solve any of the other problems from what I understand. So I'm wondering if we shouldn't be thinking more aggressively about that one goal. I mean, taking the devil's advocate position and maybe taking the complete opposite approach. But of all of the issues on the table, if we don't achieve that, we can't. It seems to me that's the spine.
I'm asking if you would repeat the last point that you made, because I couldn't hear it over you. I have a question.
I just wanted to make a comment about bullet number four. I have in mind the population that actually falls under that particular bullet, and this is adults who had some college education and dropped out. And maybe they're the low-hanging fruit in a way. The issue, of course, is financial for the most part. But those are the folks that are most willing to come back. They have the education, some college skills and some learning skills and so on. They might be the best ones to tackle in a way. So as I said, it falls under bullet four, but it's kind of a special group.
I know the discussion in New York. Ames, if I can just jump in here. So, yes, we at the Board of Regents, we've been talking about a lot of this reverse completion through Charter Oak. We're working with our military students that are coming back to really work on transfer and articulation or transcript translation with those populations. And I also wanted just to back up to point number two, and I think I'd be remiss if I didn't say that I agree with what has been said around this table, that we have a lot of independent initiatives going around in all of these points, but getting them together so it makes sense, we're not reinventing the wheel. But the K-12 and the BOR, we are working together on so many initiatives that have been spurred on by P-20 through Public Act 1240. There's so many that are going on. So I would be remiss to sit here and not say that, yes, I agree, we do. We need to continue to work on the preparedness and the definition of what college readiness is for smarter balance, all of these initiatives, and they do need to be more cohesive, but I'd be wrong in sitting here in agreeing with that, you know, nothing's happening. There is so much. The lion's share of the work of the our 17 institutions within the past 18 months has been incredible, the amount of work that is being done on that bullet point alone. Absolutely. We need a doc.
So that as you think about it, sorry, you can say as Board of Regents, and as the Planning Commission has emphasized, we're attacking, we've also set that as a priority, and we're doing all these things that we've got to go. So when we get into the question that this group coming up with saying, what are the four or five things we need to really hard to emphasize, and we need to make sure we respect the board going on, my guess is the problem is a lot going on, but whether it's adding up to the impact, doing it is another issue.
I wonder if I can...
Can I ask a question? A couple of questions. I'm not an expert in the sense that I'm not a specialist in education policy, but I did spend my life teaching social sciences, and I had a lot of very practical experience. Unfortunately, a lot of it was negative in terms of realizing these goals. One of the points that you made, someone made about the dearth of people in student services areas and so forth is so true that it's you'll have one person working with 800 students at the same time and so forth. People will be dropping out. They don't even know who they are. You call up and ask what happened with the case of this person who had language problems or something. And I think, unfortunately, the main share of investment in a lot of areas is going in the wrong direction. Not the wrong direction necessarily for everyone, but the wrong direction in terms of achievement of these goals. But the three things that I'd like to ask you about, first of all, I spent my whole life in Connecticut public higher education. My graduate degrees are from UConn, and I taught in the Connecticut State University, and I also taught for several other private universities for quite a long time, 19 years in one case. And what I've seen has been and I retired in 2010, so my information may be some degree out of date, but I have never in my life seen a serious discussion of these things in terms of the question you raised about what percentage of the achievement of this goal should go to the Connecticut State University, or what should UConn be responsible for, the community colleges and so forth. It just hasn't happened at the grassroots level. I'm talking about deans, presidents, department chairmen, people who could make a difference if they wanted to. So I think it's tremendously important to stress this. And I think the other question I wanted to ask, or one thing I wanted to ask, is as a volunteer, I've been working in the correction system in education. And I've been teaching at several of the institutions. And I'm really stunned to find the level of achievement and intelligence that you encounter in these courses, where 50 or 100 people sign up to take a course on the First World War, for example, and actually do the reading and so forth. The one thing that struck me was in none of the institutions I've been in, do they even have any online connection to any kind of course or any kind of program. you have people warehoused for 2, 4, 6, 8 years, and they can't even take a free course somewhere because there's fears that they'll misuse the equipment, or there can't be adequate protections, you know, built into the system where they wouldn't be able to go online and harass a person. But that's something that should seriously be looked into, because a lot of these guys are veterans. I would say 35 to 40% of the students I've had have been veterans. Many of them have college degrees or at least significant college credits. And it's a group that obviously needs to get their life on track and to begin to look for positive achievements. And, you know, it's something they can achieve in their lives. And they could do some preparation for getting out and getting a job after they got out if they were able to, you know, use those facilities. And the last question I had just has to do with the business community. I took economics as a minor when I was a graduate student. Actually, it was one of my supporting fields. And when I used to read about things, they talk about people responding to incentives and people looking for marginal changes in one area or another, trying to predict, you know, future developments and so forth. People will spend their money that way, consumers act that way, and so forth. The main message you get from a lot of the businesses in Connecticut, and especially the business organizations, that this is a bad place to be, that taxes are too high, costs are too high, utilities are too high, and you get a tremendous stream of negativism telling people that, you know, you're better off to go somewhere else, and that we were always ranked 49th, and this, which is, you know, one part of the thing. But if you look at other indices, we rank much higher than that. But if you read the early literature on education in the United States around the turn of the century for immigrants, which is what I did do, you notice that private businesses and organizations, even like the YMCA, YWCA, they had a major role to play in educating people at basic levels in language skills, mathematics, and so forth. And also it was the job that gave you the incentive to try to go on so you could make more money, you could rise through the ranks, and so forth. When we go out into the community, are we going to be looking for some offer of participation, I mean, by these people, other than just poor-mouthing everything that's being done or complaining about the tax rate? I mean, I think that would be tremendously important.
I will tell you, I'm going to put aside some of the issues around ratings and things like that, because those are not things that the state's business associations actually do. And if you'll actually look at CBIA's legislative agenda coming forward, our goal is really to help improve, you know, how Connecticut is envisioned. But if you look at the response of the business community that I deal with, and, you know, as head of an education foundation, I talk to a lot of businesses. One of the things that they are proudest of in Connecticut is its workforce, its educated workforce. What they are worried about, though, is that that's a moving target and that's changing. And they are deeply concerned. I mean, at some of these, you're going to see some of the very, and it's interesting if you looked at who's going to come to these meetings, you've got very small manufacturers. You've got Electric Boat. You've got Pfizer. I mean, these are people that are deeply concerned about. They're committed to working and living and doing business in this state. And in order for them to do it, they need an educated workforce. And up until, you know, recently, that's been something that they crow about all over the country. But they're getting worried now. So I think that we are all interested in making sure that that voice of what it is that they need and how they need it and what the investment of the state ought to be to support that. The business community wants to stay here. They're not interested, believe it or not, in moving out. They'd like to be here. And a lot of the things that we can, this particular issue, I think, will be very, very helpful in improving the economic productivity of the state. So, Ainsley, there was one other thing I did want to comment, if I could hog the floor for 1 second. I totally agree with you, and I hope it's very, you know, apparent that the state is doing a lot of good work. The thing that concerns me just individually is that we do pilots and we never come to scale, and we don't put our marbles in those, you know, in sustaining those efforts and working in larger contexts. And my hope for, which is why I'm a little more optimistic about being able to change and agree with Mary Lou that I think we can't back away from that goal, is that I think if we were to take some of these wonderful efforts that we are working on and make them, A, more visible, B, larger, and C, less like a pilot and more like a, we know this works and we're going to choose to take our precious dollars and put them here because we know they work, I think we can move the needle a little bit more than, you know, 5% or not. So that's the optimist in me I just wanted to share.
No, I at this point, I don't think I would add anything to the list other than what's been mentioned, and that dovetails with the work that the Coordinating Council is doing on the gender gap as well. Because I think it addresses, to a certain extent, also, as we do, the economic gap between the students. Absolutely.
No, I think between the prior groups and these goals, I think there's enough said here. I think Judy's point is absolutely correct, and not today, but at some point perhaps we can hear from you and your experience on the extent that execution, rather than setting of goals, has a larger impact on these attainment issues. Thank you.
lot of good things that they think they have to add up. So that's what I mean by trying to come out of that kind of strategy.
So I assume greater student retention rates are embedded somewhere in here, maybe in the first bullet.
Yeah, they would be definitely improved retention. Look at the data we provided. UConn is high. Part of the reason, Sally, we may want to hear from you later about why you think that's the case or that it missed it. But anyway, back. The reality is that CSU institutions are not high on the list of retention. On completion, when I talked about degrees from academics. And so I think that would be a theme in the fact that community colleges and professors are very low, and they're very low on the level of retention completion.
I'm good. I think that as long as some of these numerical goals are, as long as there's some fluidity as we continue on in this process, in terms of some of the numerical goals, in terms of the benchmarks, in terms of where we're going to. I think it's a good starting point. As long as there's some mention of this gender gap data that you had presented today, there's a lot of the data you guys have presented the last couple of meetings that wasn't surprising. That, for whatever reason, I found that a little surprising. And just to piggyback on what Judy had said regarding businesses, I work for a relatively large employer for the town that we're situated in. And granted, we're a nonprofit, but I think what she's saying is correct, is that businesses do want to be here. And where all of this comes together is higher education in general, an educated workforce does speak to the quality of life in Connecticut. So I know that it is that it's often that we're presented with this, we're 49 out of 50 in terms of this, in terms of taxes, in terms of job growth, et cetera. But I do think there's a quality of life element in here that, not just as a resident, but as an employer, I thought that was a very valid point.
Just a question for the chairs. Do you anticipate that this discussion would include or exclude the notion of contextualized learning and apprenticeships? And how does that fit in with the certifications that are spoken to here?
Whether you want to take this out or I do, but I think if you look at a strategic plan, I see that as, where do we want to be in the next 10 years? Where do we want to be? And what will be different than it is from today? How we get there, some of the details of that, I don't know, at least from my understanding, are necessarily something that we can do, but we can continue the conversation, we can establish the structure that allows that level of implementation to continue, I think, are there. But I don't know that we're going to be able to get into the real, I totally agree with you, contextualized learning. I mean, we all know you need to learn and do. and you need to, you can, if you take the curriculum and you bring in actual examples where it's used, the connection is there. I mean, all of those good principles, we could talk about learning outcomes and adult learning principles and all of that. I don't know that that is our mission, but it could be going forward.
No, I was just going to say, in terms of student attainment and, apprenticeship programs have really shown that they can make a meaningful difference in people's lives. And I think that Connecticut, you know, in terms of what we're trying to accomplish here, that we need to be maximizing our potential in that area, and we're not. And I clearly think that that's, you know, a place that we need to be going, and certainly should be exactly.
Just briefly, I think the conversation we've had with regard to this list, in terms of the priorities and how they interrelate with each other. I don't know if you make a short presentation when you introduce the list by and reordering them in terms of priorities or some other situation, but it just seems to me that we're missing the boat if we don't somehow get that information out there. I mean, we didn't just arbitrarily come up, or you didn't, or whatever, with five things. They are five things that, in fact, many, if not all of them, are very interrelated and very dependent upon each other. And like we said, maybe the second one is the or I don't remember which one it was, but
in the context of adults coming back to college for degrees and so on, I think somewhere we should mention the importance of part-time programs, available part-time programs. Not many in the age range of 25 to 64 will come back if there are no part-time adult, I call them adult, but they're the accredited programs that offer their courses on a part-time basis. I don't know where this fits in here, but I think it's an important issue.
Thank you.
Right, the black scheduling for part-time, where states are really moving ahead on that. So that's something that I think Connecticut should be looking at.
Just a couple of things. Just to pick up on what Judy was talking about in terms of the pilots, we have so many of these that are not even in place long enough to assess their impact, let alone what they are in terms of layers. It might be really helpful to know what things like New Haven Promise, which is a tuition scholarship program, or Middle College, what the results of those are in other places and how that might impact the plan. I'd love to know more about that. Just to pick up on something that David said in terms of the erosion of social safety nets, and you talked about YMCAs, you know, educating people, bringing people into communities culturally through language. And I wonder if there's any information from other places about the correlation between the erosion of the social safety nets and the immersion of this lack of readiness. And if that's not something we should be looking at in the context of this conversation, or maybe at the forums and the local levels, maybe there's differences.
Yeah, one of the things that interests me is moving to the employer also need to do the same thing with the providers.
Right.
And to get a really good sense, I think, partly on what's already going on with the board of regional institutions.
Yeah. Exactly. There are nonprofits in our communities all across the state that are doing pieces of the job. But what could be, what lessons could be learned that could be amplified in a more statewide? Exactly. And lastly, just the question of economic and geographic mobility. It seems like we're talking about making sure that there's access across our systems. But if people in the inner cities can't actually get to places or can't imagine themselves beyond a profession or a career that's just vocational, we can't really help move the needle on this. So those are just my thoughts and questions.
Again, encourage us to really consider which of these we have control over in higher education, as opposed to which of these, you know, belong to the K-12 schools, for example. Like, for example, work with K-12 system to better align K-12 and reduce by half the proportion of full-time community college and required remediation. To me, you know, perhaps what we say is develop programs for students, summer programs for students going into community colleges to help them so they don't need remediation. That's something that we would have control over. We can't change. 169 school districts in the state. You know, we don't have enough time to go to every high school. So I think I would urge us to have lesser themes and more realistic goals. For example, several of us have approved tuition increases as opposed to looking at your last increased productivity of Connecticut's public higher education to decrease costs per undergraduate degree. It's going to be hard to do that. I mean, a lot of the community colleges are already charging rock bottom costs, and to do a better job and have more advisors, they might need to increase costs. You know, we had to increase tuition to get our
back.
But I think that's perhaps a better way of stating this.
I mean, that's
right. But systemically, to say, look at alternate forms of delivery, so that college is more affordable. That makes sense to me.
But if you look at overall delivery,
right,
you know, essentially,
but just I'm disagreeing with that with your.
So, you know, I only want to understand right. You're absolutely right. Mm-hmm. But if you have a system which is in fact producing more degrees mm-hmm. of dollars mm-hmm. granted, and there is no way to improve that, and there is not going to be any way to influx of money to do that, due to that system changes pretty dramatically, mm-hmm. they would not think of it way. So I want to raise it from a perspective.
Right, but increased service delivery systems so more students can attend and graduate from economically important degree programs to me is a more realistic goal than decreased cost for undergrad. Do you know what I'm saying? I mean, to me, I'm not sure this is feasible. I think it is feasible for us to study and identify alternate delivery systems. I think we could all work together to do that. So I guess what you're saying is in proportion, if many more students were doing that, that overall this would go down. But unless it was a critical goal for the state of Connecticut that we had to have X number of, you know, individuals in this particular economic or this particular employment strata, then perhaps it is worth, you know, advanced systems manufacturing. You know, if we increase the delivery of graduates by 200 a year, maybe we meet the demand. I just think that the way some of these are stated, they're impossible to achieve. If we state it in different ways, the way that you explained it to me is a lot more understandable than this. And I feel like, you know, identifying alternate delivery systems, working together collaboratively with the community colleges and the BOR system in UConn to identify opportunities for increasing undergraduate degrees in alternate delivery systems and even putting some percentages on that. But, you know, I'm back to my same concern about reducing attainment gaps between whites and minorities. You know, higher ed achievement attainment gaps by running summer programs or by, you know, I think we need to be a little more specific.
Okay, but I want to, yep. On that latter one, the goal is not focused on institutions,
right.
But including the graduation rate of coming from the question is, that's why we have a conversation
right.
I do. I have a couple of points that are going to lead straight from what Dr. Reese said, and you set me up beautifully for a lot of this. It's this paradigm. It's this increase our capacity while keeping our cost low. It's offering more online offerings when we are desperately right now trying to build up funds to support our internal infrastructure so we can go forth and support Dr. Gray's Excel CT strategic plan that really focuses on the role of Charter Oak and highlighting that in the state of Connecticut. One point that I feel very passionately about that I want to put forward there is the first slide, the very first thing we were talking about, raising the certificate and licensure levels in the state of Connecticut. Yes, 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 but let us all be very, very cognizant of we do not want to become certificate, licensure, or degree granting factories in Connecticut. It needs to be clearly defined what these certificates and these licensures are leading these graduates toward, that there is not a, okay, I did an 18-month program and now I've got nothing to show for it. We can't get in that business. So if it is backed up by the support of whether this is apprenticeship or direct alignment with workforce, or whether this is certificate, licensure, and degrees that lead into more degrees, that's a whole other conversation. But I think that we have been in gotten ourselves into deep water before when accused to saying, okay, great, you've got 50,000 degrees on your books, and they are there's nothing to show for it. So okay. Okay.
Okay, and we'll just to underscore, well, I'll come back to the fact that I just mentioned
First, I just want so you've had that one slide up, but there are two pages of these
yeah,
themes, and so which I don't. But I just want to clarify that we're looking at all of those. Right. We focus a lot, and I think that you know my comment, which I had written down before people started to talk, was really that issues around retention and graduation rates are really embedded in many of these, but they're not clearly called out. And so, for example, when I read productivity, I understand that. I'm just so because of that, I think you have to then make sure that what is written is very clear. So when I read about the productivity and cost, I read it as actually increasing graduation rates as a piece of making the cost per degree less. So I think it's just it's being clear on what you're saying here. There may be some crisper words that would help. I think that I certainly agree with Dennis that there's a mix here in terms of where you're saying an actual number and then you're not saying an actual number, and I think it would be helpful for all of us to see what those real numbers are in every one of these cases, because while they're difficult, I think we have to have a state as a state goal. We can't just say, doesn't mean we can't, it's not going to be very difficult, and we need to have a broader conversation with K-12, but you have to get those numbers on here. So.
Yes, although they're stated, of course, in a general way now, I'm... Yes. Although the goals are stated, of course, in a very general way now, I think they're very important. I would embrace all of them. And I think especially issues of reducing gaps in achievement and in maintaining affordability really strikes at the heart of whether you're going to have a decent society in the state. And to the extent we can make any improvement in that at all, I think it would be for the benefit of everyone. And I would just like to add a final side. I'm afraid my reading of what's going on now, particularly in the public system that I know best, is that there hasn't been enough attention devoted to those issues. We all know what the workforce is going to look like in 10 years, 7 to 10 years. We've got to prepare for that, and it's the right and decent thing to do.
I'll try to limit this. I feel that we have to set realistic, set a benchmark goal. Because at the end of the day, we know what one needs in order to live a successful, and productive life in Connecticut, and that the jobs are going to be out there. Otherwise, what I see happening here in Connecticut is the achievement gap. If we don't do something, all these things we're looking at are only going to get worse. This is not going to be getting better. The equity issues are only going to be exacerbated if we don't act. And so I think we have to say what we are and where we need to be and what we have to do that. And I look at other state agencies. This will date me, but back in the late 70s, Connecticut set a goal for farmland preservation, very specific goal. you know, so many hundreds of thousands. And that's the benchmark that every year we look at to see where we are, and this is for, you know, 40 years later. So we're not where we were supposed to be, but the point is that it really does push us to do better, and I think we have to push all of us. And we have to focus on, you know, as Sally said, what's doable. You know, we don't want to feel we're failures at the end of the day or throw in the towel. But at the same time, we do have to set high standards, and we have to worry about us. We can't worry about pre-K. We can't worry about, you know, I'm going to trust that all these other people are doing what we're doing, and that we just need to focus on our higher ed institutions and how we fit into that. And I am very optimistic that we can do some of these things by making, you know, through remediation and through more programs. And I like what Aisley had to say about, you know, not becoming degree factories, that we have to maintain quality, and Connecticut can do that. So I know that's kind of all over the place, but that's kind of where I'm at. Oh. Well, I don't know where I am half the time.
So I just wanted to maybe come back and say, I think all of us
Just a reminder, too, again, if you do plan to come to any of the three meetings this week, let me know as well. That would be terrific. One other thing before I forget. At this point, because we're going to still be doing the regional meetings, the intent is not to have a formal Planning Commission meeting in January. So hopefully we will have one set in February 40th. Anything else for the good of the order? I wanted to just thank people for a very earnest conversation. I mean, clearly we all come from one common perspective, which is that we all care what happens in Connecticut with higher education, and we all come from our own personal space within that, and it's sometimes very, very hard to branch those differences, but the fact that we are having these discussions, I think, is just terrific. My hope, actually, you know, if you would ask me what's there, is that this strategic plan would provide a structure for a more collaborative view of education in general in Connecticut, so that as we move forward with this plan, it doesn't die on a shelf like other places do. We will have engaged enough people who have a comfort level that is far greater than it's been in the past. So that's my fervent prayer for what comes out of all of this.
And one of the things they've really done is
come back, there have been more degrees produced, but in fact the achievement gaps have not narrowed. You know, it's just, the gaps are amazing, you know. So it's a good illustration of how hard these things are, but it does, what there's a combination of the long-term goals with then sort of action periods that over the next 4 or 5 years, these are things we're going to concentrate on. So it isn't just so abstract. There are a set of actions that are really pursued within each one of those periods. And so it becomes a much more practical, realistic kind of exercise. And I think that we can get that out of there. And then the question is, what do you recommend as the means to continue this? And I don't, you know, I think if you look at the current statute, it's kind of pretty fuzzy about who does what about what and reporting on things. And I think if we can come up with recommendations of how to make it practical and continue so that now 5 years from now, this just doesn't look like a disappeared commission. Okay, so anyway, happy snow.
Season's greetings. And Ames, what do you say about us when you go to other states? That's what I want to know.
Please drive safely and have a wonderful holiday season, everybody.